This podcast is sponsored by Canaccord Genuity Wealth Management, award-winning wealth managers who go above and beyond to support and guide you. Visit candowealth.com to start building your wealth with confidence.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Isabel Hardman and this is the Sunday Roundup. The Business Secretary Kwasi Kwarteng joined Andrew Marr this morning amid a time of turmoil in the energy markets. Wholesale gas prices have risen by 250% since January and by as much as 70% since August, when the market regulator Ofgem announced its latest price cap for consumers. With 12 energy companies already having gone bust since the start of the year, the government is facing calls within the industry to increase the price cap so that pressure can be eased on smaller firms.
As you will know, the key lever, the key way we can protect consumers is through the price cap. You'll also know that many industry players have suggested maybe we lift the price cap, maybe it's a temporary change to it. But I've been very resolute and clear so that the price cap stays.
A temporary change, you've said. A lot of the industry would like you to shift the next change in the price cap from April back to January. They say that would help them hugely. Is that something you're looking at?
So let me be very clear about the price cap. The price cap was set in August for the six-month period between the 1st of October and the 1st of April. That isn't going to change.
Not going to change.
That's not going to change, and I've been very clear about that. And the reason why it isn't is because we need to protect consumers. That's been my first and foremost objective, to protect consumers from the wild spikes in prices.
Trevor Phillips asked Kwarteng about any potential relief that the government might give to businesses that are dependent on heavy levels of energy use.
Well, as you know, Trevor, I spoke very extensively with energy-intensive users industry on Friday. We've already, over the last few years, given lots of support on electricity, and we're on electricity pricing, in particular power. And we're speaking constantly with them to see if there's a way through, and also engaging Treasury as well. I can't promise anything as yet, but we are absolutely focused on solving this problem.
When you say as yet, does that mean that you have gone to the Treasury to ask them for a subsidy of some description?
No, I haven't. We've already got subsidies in place, and it's very clear that, you know, a lot of those are working. We've subsidised something like £2 billion since 2013 for industry, heavy energy users, heavy industry. But we are constantly, as you would expect, in conversation with them to see where we can support.
Well, what are you talking to Treasury about? I mean, the head of UK Steel says this is a crisis. Production may have to be cut or stopped. What are you talking to the Treasury about to prevent that happening?
So, as I said, on the consumer side, we've got an energy price cap. And on the industry side, we've had measures where we support industries, heavy electricity users.
And there's absolutely no possibility of a price cap for industry.
No.
Can you be clear about that?
What I am very clear about is that we need to get through this situation. It's a difficult situation. Gas prices, electricity prices are at very high levels right across the world. And of course, I'm speaking with government colleagues, particularly in the Treasury, to try and see a way through this.
However, within an hour of Kwarteng's interview, Sky's deputy political editor Sam Coates reported a sharp rebuke to Kwarteng from a source inside the Treasury. The source said this is not the first time the business secretary has made things up in interviews. To be crystal clear, Treasury are not involved in any talks. Aside from this awkward incident, Phillips asked Kwarteng about relations between the UK and France regarding the number of refugees making the perilous journey across the Channel.
Is the French government, who are now complaining that you haven't paid them the £54 million you promised to solve the problem of Channel crossings, are they going to get their money?
Well, all I can say is that we've worked very effectively with the French government so far. We've had 300 arrests. We've worked with them to do that. There have been 65 convictions. And we both accept that there are something like 13,500 crossings that have been prevented through our working together. So it is a good collaborative relationship, and we obviously want to improve that.
Well, you say it's a good collaborative relationship. But frankly, from the other side of the channel, it doesn't look like that. Here's what the French Interior Minister, Gérald Darmanin, said. He said, firstly, the British government has not yet paid what they promised us. Not one euro has been sent by the British government following the agreement much negotiated for many months with Madame Patel. Now, you're actually an author.
Yes.
If you had negotiated a deal and then they didn't pay up their advance, you wouldn't be writing a single word, would you?
Well, they tend to stagger the payments.
Yeah, but you get the payment first.
But all I know and all I can see is that we have actually worked very effectively with them. There have been, as I say, at least 65 convictions. So things are actually happening on the ground. And I'm sure the Home Secretary is working very hard to make sure that we actually deliver on this very critical problem.
Phillips went on to speak to the Shadow Work and Pensions Secretary, Jonathan Reynolds, asking him about Labour's intended remedies for helping to resolve the gas crisis. Sir Keir Starmer came under fire 2 weeks ago for being evasive about his earlier promises to nationalise energy companies. Reynolds' response suggested that public ownership of energy was not seriously on the Labour leader's cards.
Mr Reynolds, is energy a sector ripe for what Labour now calls common ownership?
Common ownership, public ownership, will always be a part of our plans for some sectors. But I think specifically when you're talking about wholesale energy costs and the crisis people are facing in terms of their energy bills, it's not the solution that will find the way forward for the position people are in. I mean, the energy crisis has come from complacency. It's come from the fact the government, you know, cut the green crap, and the energy efficiency programme in 2015 was stalled by David Cameron's government. The nuclear programme hasn't proceeded. You haven't seen onshore wind progress because of the block of government policy that existed. And crucially, energy storage, the enormous gas storage field in Rough Field in 2017 was closed because the government wanted to save money. So the choices that people have been made in government have directly affected the cost of living crisis that we're facing today. So they will be part of public services where common ownership will be part of our plans, but it would be wrong to present it as the solution to this particular crisis, which is frankly down to government policy and poor decisions being made.
Former Deputy Prime Minister Michael Heseltine had a grim prognosis for the future of the British economy.
I think that we are heading to a significant increase in inflation, which will lead to increases in interest rates. And if I was Chancellor of the Exchequer, I would be extremely worried about all the demands which are, you heard the Labour spokesman now, classic Labour spokesman, spend more money, $6 billion on the universal credit, subsidise the gas industry. Plenty, and these crises in industry after industry are going to come now in fast and thick in the ensuing months. And every time there'll be a demand for more taxpayers' money. What, of course, they never tell you, but the economists are all writing about it, is that sooner or later there's going to be interest rate increases, which, of course, will impact very dramatically on very large numbers of people, particularly those with mortgages. This is a very nasty situation. It's a very complicated situation. And I can well understand the government's reluctance to introduce what will always be called a temporary palliative. These palliatives are never temporary. They become built into the system. And we're already running on borrowed time, so to speak, in economic terms.
Dr. Jenny Harries, the chief executive of the new Health Security Agency, told Andrew Marr that it was important people made sure they were protected against flu this winter.
Now, because there hasn't been so much flu circulating, because we've been wearing masks and staying inside and all of that, I gather that makes it harder to be absolutely sure that this flu vaccine is highly effective on this particular strain of flu. As somebody who's had my flu vaccine, are you concerned about that?
So it's a more uncertain year, but I certainly would be encouraging everybody to go and get to the vaccine. As usual, we work with WHO. We look at what's happened on the other side of the world, because obviously their winter season comes first. And we have a multi-strain vaccine, so it will be two influenza A's and two influenza B's. But there is a slightly higher degree of uncertainty around that, partly because we've had such few cases, and partly because individuals' health-seeking behaviours, if you like, have meant that they perhaps haven't come to be tested as much, and therefore we won't have so many samples on which to base that decision.
So without scaremongering, we are a bit more vulnerable this winter.
Yes, I think the important messages here is this is probably the first season where we will have significant amounts of COVID circulating as well as flu. People's behaviours have changed. We're mixing more. Winter weather is coming along. Everybody's going into enclosed spaces. And we do know from the small amount of data that we've had previously that people are at more significant risk of death and of serious illness if they are co-infected with flu and with COVID. And that doesn't seem to be, from our studies, a fact which many of the public understand.
And finally, on Times Radio, Tom Newton-Dunn and I asked Kwasi Kwarteng if now was the right time for the Prime Minister to take a break in Marbella.
The Prime Minister's gone on holiday. He's in Marbella. Lucky him. Wouldn't we all like to be there? Is that the right thing for him to do when the nation is facing multiple swells and potential crises, cost of living and the like?
I believe he has gone away. I'm not sure where he's gone. But what I would say is that I'm in regular contact with him. He's also had a year and a half in which he almost lost his life to COVID. His mother passed away very sadly 2 or 3 weeks ago. And he's decided to take a short, he may have decided to take a short break. I don't know where. But I think that's something reasonable.
That's all for this week. I'm Isabel Hardman, and this podcast was produced by Matthew Taylor. Don't forget to subscribe to the Coffee House Shots podcast on the iTunes store. And if you enjoyed this podcast, do subscribe to our daily Evening Blend email. It's a free roundup of all the political news each day, along with analysis and a diary on what to expect next. Just go to spectator.co.uk/Evening Blend. Thanks for listening, and do join us again next week.